Before I introduce today's story, I'd like to remind you that all of our past episodes are available online. Just go to the Audio Lounge section on the Spineless Wonders website at www.shortaustralianstories.com.au. Our previous Little Fictions episodes are there for you to listen to or download. If you have any feedback for us about the show, please email us at info@shortaustralianstories.com.au. Thank you. Hello and welcome to Little Fictions on Air. I'm Kate Liston Mills, your host. Our story today is about family, death, and the idea of the circle of life. It is written by Michael Giacometti. Michael grew up just outside Melbourne. He spent time in South America and India, then 11 years in Alice Springs. He now resides in Tasmania. Michael is, as far as he is aware, the first and only non-Indigenous Australian to cross the Simpson Desert from east to west unaided. This is the most difficult route. As well as being a writer and poet, he has also spent time working as an educator, ranger, stagehand, computer programmer, amongst other professions. He is a poet, essayist, and fiction writer, and his work has been published in Meanjin, Island, Wild, the Australian Poetry Anthology, and other collections of short stories and poetry. His poetry work has twice been awarded the Northern Territory Literary Award for Poetry. Featured on his personal website is an extensive reading list and further information about this author. The title of today's short fiction is The Uncoupling of Eduardo Martinez. Michael explains in an interview with Spineless Wonders that most of his work has an underlying Buddhist theme of being stuck in a repetitive cycle, or of escaping a trap. In Buddhism, the repetitive cycle is called samsara, the never-ending birth and death cycle perpetuated by ignorance. Samsara relates to the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism. In simplistic terms, these are called dukkha, which is the suffering that is an inherent characteristic with each rebirth. Samudaya, that is the cause of the suffering, referring to craving or desire. Nirodha, meaning when one can eliminate the desire. And finally, Magga, the noble enlightenment and the means to end dukkha, therefore escaping from the trap of the cycle. In our story today, Eduardo and his father are acting out their own repetitive life cycle. And although Eduardo's father tried in a small way to change the family cycle, it seems that he didn't do enough to release Eduardo from the family's fate. The notion of impermanence is essential to Buddha's teaching and compels us to understand the inescapable truth of our own mortality and to give attention to living our life in the moment. Impermanence or finitude is understood by some philosophers as living with the anticipation that this will not last forever. One such contemporary philosopher, Martin Hägglund, explains that finitude is a threat as well as providing an essential fragility to human life. In the story today, Eduardo, his father, and their fathers before them all seem to be accepting of their life cycle without having any notion of changing or evolving. They just are. These themes are interesting to consider while listening to the story. As Michael says, writers write themes and these remain generally the same, with small differences in place, character, and era. Michael feels that most of his stories do centre around a Buddhist theme and that the characters he writes are trying to break free from whatever cycle they are in – desire, fate, unbreakable cycles, and transcendence. I hope you enjoy it.
The Uncoupling of Eduardo Martinez by Michael Giacometti. The story begins with an epigraph. What we think, we become. Buddha. 1. Midway through the afternoon class, the police constable, cap in hand, tapped lightly on the schoolroom door and entered without waiting for a reply. He closed the door quietly behind him, then stood, facing the class, shifting his weight uncomfortably from one foot to the other. Between him and the ragged pupils, the aged schoolmaster stood, leaning his wiry frame against the front of his desk. On the faded blackboard behind the schoolmaster, chalked in his neatest script, was a single underlined word: genealogy. The schoolmaster was unaware that someone had entered the room. Only the eyes of his few students, drawn to the rocking statue of the uniformed visitor, alerted him. As he turned, the schoolmaster concluded the spoken lesson about the transference of dominant and regressive genes during selective breeding. So, by carefully selecting the parent animals or flowers for specific qualities, we can produce an offspring that is a hybrid, a new strain, one that is genetically different, superior even, to its creators. As he spoke, he signalled to the constable to come forward, and as the final word echoed through the hollow room, the constable's mouth whispered into his ear. Less than 1 minute later, the constable, cap on head, was striding out the school gate closely tailed by the young student Eduardo Martinez, who had to alternately walk, skip and trot to keep pace. They traversed the major avenue busy with cars, buses and laden trucks, all heading elsewhere, to the airport, the city, everywhere but here. The other side of the avenue was a wasteland of desert and low scrub. In the distance, shimmering in the heat haze, lay the metal tracks of the railway. Neither spoke while they crossed the desert, like a priest and his disciple in tow, walking back in time to re-enter the town by its ancient heart. The railroad. 2. Eduardo Martinez was conceived during the impatient coupling of his virgin parents, eager to consummate their minutes-old vows. Here's how it happened. As the priest concluded the ceremony, the new husband raised his bride's veil. Their toes touched, their hands joined, and their eager lips made a moist connection, completing the circuit. Holding hands, not breaking the pulse of energy which made their eyes glow with unrestrained passion, they signed in the ruled columns of the centuries-old leather-bound marriage register. Then, while the priest spread blessed sand to dry over the couple's signatures, the newlyweds drew each other to the nearby anteroom and closed the door. In the darkened room, the heat of their desire made them glow like an aurora, giving light to their lovemaking. A cacophony of sound encased the room and the chapel. The rhythmic pounding of flesh into flesh against the wall kept tempo with the joyous clapping of the guests. Their breathless soprano and tenor merged with the angelic chorus of the choir. As the final hallelujah soared through the roof beams to the heavens, a burst of white lightning shot from the husband's blazing eyes, and the soul of Eduardo Martinez swam furiously upstream. The blush on the love bride's cheek soon blossomed in her belly, and within months, or so it seemed, a son was born. Eduardo, the latest in an unbroken line of firstborn sons of the Martinez family, all with the same unnumbered name. But it nearly didn't happen that way. Eduardo Martinez's paternal grandmother, Maria, wanted her headstrong's first son, Eduardo, to marry Maria Cassie, a sturdy but not unattractive daughter of the Fetler. She had recently met with the Fetler and his wife to discuss the terms and conditions of their union. In her mind, she was continuing the tradition of the Martinez family, marrying the firstborn Eduardo with Maria, the secondborn Jose with Abril, and so on. But Eduardo Martinez had fallen for the willful beauty Eliza, the shopkeeper's fetching second daughter. When finally he overheard his mother's scheming, he abruptly broke the silent secret of his love. "What's wrong with Maria?" declared his mother. "I don't love her," he said, exasperated. I love Eliza. I want to marry her. Shocked at her son's sudden confession, Maria stood open-mouthed. But, she said, stumbling over the words, you don't have to love her. Maria is a good match for you, and she will bring a good dowry. Mother, said Eduardo Martinez slowly and clearly, not wanting to be misunderstood, I don't want a promised bride. I want a love marriage. I love Eliza. I will marry her. Eduardo Martinez turned and, with a new conviction, walked up the corridor and out the front door. Without her husband to back her up, his mother relented. Well, can't she change her name? She called after him. But Eduardo Martinez was beyond hearing, already rehearsing his proposal to Eliza. Eliza. The three syllables made his tongue move in new ways. 3. Eduardo Martinez, the husband of Eliza, worked as a signalman in the railway switching and shunting yard of a small town at the junction of several lines. In fact, as far back as records and folklore went, Eduardo Martinez had always worked as a signalman at the railway. For centuries, just like the Phantom, his father used to joke. Immortal, same name, same job, but a different person behind the mask. The life of Eduardo Martinez was close to a repeat of his patrilineal ancestry of firstborn sons. His father died when Eduardo Martinez was one day shy of his 13th birthday. As the firstborn son, it was his inalienable right and responsibility to inherit his father's terms of employment. So one day after his father Eduardo Martinez's internment and 3 days after his fatherless introduction to manhood, Eduardo Martinez began work as a signalman at the railway switching yard. He would work as a railway signalman like his fathers before him, just as his father's brothers and their father's brothers before them worked and died at sea. At 19, he married Eliza, not Maria, and within a year, a son was born, Eduardo, the heir. Now in his early 30s, Eduardo Martinez had worked for more than half his life at the railway. He was 2 years older than his grandfather lived, 1 year younger than his own father, at the median age of the Eduardo Martinez longevity. 4. From the moment that Eduardo Martinez left the schoolroom, he had held a conversation in his head with his father. He already knew the words his father was waiting to say to him. The play for two players, dying father and firstborn son, was ingrained in the family DNA. The script called for him to make an honourable response and stand by his father's side in readiness for the handover, but the words caught in his throat, making him dry retch, just like when he tried to swallow the oversized fish oil tablet that his mother said was good for him. The constable and Eduardo Martinez crossed one line of standard gauge tracks. They continued towards the shunting yard, where a long line of carriages attached to a lightly smoking locomotive stood. As they rounded the caboose, they came across the last person in a long queue which filed its way beside the numerous freight carriages. Eduardo Martinez stopped in his tracks. The constable continued, unaware. Who are all these people? Thought Eduardo Martinez. He stepped forward, slowly, not looking ahead, but gazed intently at each person that he passed. The words of his family's melodrama faded. The nameless faces in the queue became unfocused. He found himself just inside the front door of his family home, at the head of the long corridor, the corridor that connects the front door to the back door, dividing the house neatly in half. The walls of the corridor are lined with portraits. Many times a day he walks along this corridor, in full or in part. And every Sunday since he could walk, his father led him through the portrait gallery. This is history here, his father began every week. Your history. It is more important than anything that schoolmaster can teach you. Every Sunday, for almost a dozen years, his father had taught and tested him, in front of every painted face, every photographed profile, the images of firstborn sons, the sacred lineage of Eduardo Martinez. Standing at the head of the house, the corridor seemed to stretch endlessly. The first portrait in the sequence of Eduardo Martinez began on the left wall. Eduardo Martinez filed slowly, funereally, past them. He had never met his paternal grandfather. He died years before he was born, and yet he felt as if he knew them all intimately, the name of their wife and children, the age at which they passed on, their quirks and habits, their nicknames. From the first portrait through to the last, he could follow the familiar curve of chin, the colour and spacing of eyes, the ever so slight hook of nose, the cowlick no brush could flatten, and the dark hair that never aged enough to go grey. Although they all looked so similar, Eduardo Martinez had his favourites, to which he gave his own nicknames. In front of these he now stopped. The 26th portrait, El Guardia, the flagman. Painted in oils, a proud-faced young man in front of a background of railroad signal flags. Wife, Maria, 13 children, age 45 years. Portrait number 58, Encajone Cabeza, boxhead. Painted in cubist style by the cousin of a semi-prominent artist of the time, now regarded as an illegitimate fraud. Even so, the distinctive family features are prominent. Wife, Maria, 8 children, with 2 sets of twins, age 37 years. Number 98, El Spectro. Handheld self-portrait taken in low light or after drinking too many pisco sours. The print is slightly unfocused, underexposed. He died within days of hanging the photograph and his young son, El Lechero que sueña, the dreaming milkman, was barely off the teat when he replaced him in the signalman's box. Wife, Maria, 2 children, age 19. The final portrait, number 119, Pa, an overexposed black-and-white photograph of his father, eyes closed, hand on forehead, gripping the smouldering butt of the cigarette between index and forefinger. Wife, Eliza, 1 child. To the right of Eduardo Martinez's father's portrait, on the right wall nearest the front door, an empty picture frame. 5. The railway was one of the nation's prized jewels, a valuable necklace that transported much-needed coal, timber, copper, and gold from the nether regions of the state to the cities and ports. As signalman, Eduardo Martinez regulated the flow of freight from several remote lines. He imagined himself as a valet to the Queen, personally choosing which jewellery she was to wear for each occasion. After consulting the diary of today's appointments, he picked out one of his favourites in the royal colours. Emeralds from the deep south, interspersed with rubies from the volcanic plains, all set in a yolk of gold the colour of corn-fed chicken eggs. He clasped the jewels around her fine neck as he descended the steps of the signalman's box and strolled into the shunting yard, where the weekly XXY Limited Express was soon due to pull in to add some freight carriages to its load of human cargo bound for the capital. Most of the time, Eduardo Martinez remained in his lofty perch overseeing the goings-on about the rail yard, but one brakeman was ill, another lost a finger a few days ago, so Eduardo Martinez had volunteered to cover them temporarily. Walking into the shunting yard, his mind on the Queen's jewels, about to couple the rolling freight stock to the passenger carriages of the XXY Limited Express, he had no idea that he was taking his last steps on Earth. The XXY Limited Express was the oldest in the fleet, the only online relic of the railway's glory days. The carriages were coupled old style, using the link and pin. Simple and effective. An oblong link made from a solid steel spike connected to one carriage was inserted into a tube-like body on the other carriage. Once together, a metal pin was inserted into a hole in the tube that went through the link and out the other side of the tube, holding the link in place. All of the men at the railway had seen the devastating effects of the link and pin coupler. Severed fingers, amputated hands, men dragged under carriages that were being driven too fast. For their own safety, the brakemen were issued with a heavy club to hold the link in position. Most of them left it in the brakeman's box, preferring the sport and skill of quick eyes and hands. So too did Eduardo Martinez. He directed the locomotive and carriages in slowly, slowly. When they were about 2 meters apart, he raised two arms to the distant driver and stepped into the breach. He had about 3 seconds. He lifted the heavy steel link near the tip from below with his right hand, grabbed it with his left near the base of the link, and slid his right hand back there too. 2 seconds. He checked the line of the advancing tube. Good. 1 second. The crucial time. Once the head of the link entered the tube, he had to quickly release his hands or lose a finger. 1 second. His gloved hand slid. The link fell. He stepped forward to pick it up, stumbled. He raised the link as the final passenger carriage rolled back to couple with the freight stock. 6. Young Eduardo Martinez was not sure how long he had been staring at his reflected image in the glass of the empty picture frame. He blinked. When his eyes opened, the harsh light of the afternoon had softened. He closed his eyes, held them closed. The chanted conversation came back to him. He repeated it, again and again, as if by repetition his father's words and his silence could create something different. When finally he opened his eyes, this is what he saw. 3 men standing on the gravel before him, only meters away, the constable on the left, the priest on the right. On either side of them, carriages of the train. Extending from the right, a slow-moving queue of unknown people paying their respects to the middleman, his father, whose chest was crushed between the 6th and 7th carriages of the XXY Limited Express. Eduardo Martinez stepped forward and replaced the constable. Although he was experiencing great pain, Eduardo Martinez continued to smile and attend to the many people that came to him. He knew he would die. The doctors had already told him there was nothing they could do, then left. As soon as the carriages that held him suspended like a child's puppet were parted, the toxins from his crushed chest would overrun his body, killing him instantly. He could live only as long as he remained the coupling link. 7. Throughout the night, the queue of townsfolk seemed to continue for miles. Torches were lit around the Trinity. Hawkers walked the line selling hot food and cold drinks. Buskers sat in the breezy alcoves of the joined carriages, their jolly music lending a carnival atmosphere. Finally, as a thin sliver of sunlight appeared over the ridge, the last in line was received and sent away with a blessing. At last, with only the priest as their audience, Eduardo Martinez grasped his father's hand to play the final act of the family drama. The dying signalman, Eduardo Martinez, played Eduardo Martinez. His son and heir played himself. Eduardo, my firstborn son, all that was mine is now yours. In rehearsed silence, Eduardo Martinez kissed his father on both cheeks, released his hand. Without a solitary word, without looking back, he deliberately walked the length of the train and boarded the locomotive. He picked up an idle coal shovel and bent his weight to the new task.
That was Michael Giacometti reading his story, The Uncoupling of Eduardo Martinez. The story opens with young Eduardo learning about dominant and recessive genes and selective breeding. This lays out for us what we are meant to be considering whilst listening to the remainder of the narrative. The life cycle of his family is set up through parental names, birth order, as well as what trade or profession they will work in when the time comes. Throughout the story, there are references to this cycle and connections with the cycle to the trains and coupling of their carriages and the coupling of marriage. Young Eduardo's father attempted to shift the cycle in his own way by insisting on a love match to a woman who wasn't named Maria. Although his mother wondered if Eliza would consider changing her name. He never managed to change anything else about this cycle, though, excepting that as an Eduardo, he would most likely die somewhere in his early 30s. What we think we become is the Buddhist quote at the beginning of the story, and is worthwhile remembering as we consider Eduardo's life and young Eduardo's implied responsibility as a part of this family. Eduardo and Maria's marriage was consummated by the joining of lips, toes, and hands, a metaphor for the way the link pin joins one carriage to another. The same coupling that will eventually end their marriage. As young Eduardo goes to see his father before the carriages are uncoupled, we join him in the corridor of portraits, remembering the Eduardos before him that lived and died on the railway. He seems to be sadly accepting of what will follow, both his father's death and his own future. Young Eduardo doesn't seem to believe that there is any other life for him. There isn't an escape. However, his own father had a glimmer of hopefulness that comes with the ability to affect change when he married Eliza. Perhaps we can imagine a different life for young Eduardo too. The uncoupling of Eduardo Martinez forms a part of a collection of short stories by Michael, My Life and Other Fictions, published by Spineless Wonders, and it can be found on the Spineless Wonders website. You can join our exciting book club each month to chat with other listeners about our stories. We try where possible to have a guest author to answer your questions and speak about story writing. Everyone is welcome. We hope you can make it to our next one happening very soon on the Spineless Wonders Facebook page. On the Spineless Wonders website, you can also find links to our latest news, including the 2020 Slinkies, our call out to LGBTQI writers for essay submissions, lockdown literature, and much more exciting things happening in Australian literature. And that's all we have time for today. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Little Fictions on Air is produced by Bronwyn Meehan and Caddy Hansen. I'm Kate Liston Mills. Please join me again for Little Fictions on Air.